This is CliffCentral.com.
I have in front of me a man who has caused massive waves in the world of nutrition and the world of what's, you know, got to do with banting and whether we're putting horrible things into our body, good things into our body, what the best and most optimal way is to get your health and your nutritional balance exactly right. He's written a book along with Marikis Boros recently, which is called The Law of Nutrition. I think you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Professor Tim Noakes. How are you, sir?
Gareth, thank you very much for having me. It's a privilege to be here. Thank you.
It's nice to see you. You're only the most dangerous man in nutrition.
Exactly.
You really imagine, are. You just everywhere you go, you cause shit. It's unbelievable.
Imagine if everyone followed this and got healthy. I mean, that's how dangerous this advice is.
Someone said to me the other day, what diet are you following? And I said to them, the eat when you're hungry diet.
Well, that's definitely the banting diet. And that the beauty of the banting diet is you're never hungry, so you don't need to eat too much.
All right. So the banting diet, as I understand it, and it's very pedestrian because I'm not a foodie, and I also have never studied this stuff, and I don't really care. If I could get a pill every day that gave me what I needed, I'd be thrilled. I'm a eat to live, not a live to eat kind of guy.
Good.
And people get very emotional about food, right?
Ooh, terribly.
So here's what I understand. Banting is where you can have low carbs, high fat. Is that about right?
Yeah.
I'm really simplifying it.
The interesting thing is once you cut the carbohydrates out, you actually don't eat any more fat than you were already eating. And the same with protein. So the calling it a high-fat diet is actually wrong.
Okay, so this doesn't mean – you're not telling those walruses out there who eat the rind of a steak before they eat the steak. You're not saying to them, that's good, do more of that.
Well, we don't stop them from doing that, but the key is to cut the sugar and the unnecessary carbohydrates.
Now, sugar is poison.
It absolutely is. It's worse than poison. It's a drug. It's not a food. And people need to understand that. It's as addictive as heroin and cocaine.
Well, I just read a story this week, actually, about how people are saying sugar is... the reason we think sugar is so good is because there was an active PR campaign in the 1960s, 70s,
correct,
where people said sugar's good for you. Yeah. All the sugar manufacturers were actively putting misinformation out there, and they were suppressing info about how bad it is.
That's correct. And the paper came out, in fact, 2 days ago.
Ah, so I'm on top
of
things.
Absolutely.
I'm even ahead of your book.
That's right. So what happened in the 1950s is that suddenly they thought that rates of heart disease were rising all of a sudden.
All right.
And they had to find out what the cause was. And there was a guy called Ansel Keys, and he said it's saturated fat. Although the saturated fat intake was going down in the United States at the time, he said we're eating too much saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
And the competitor was sugar. And as I describe in the book, the sugar industry got together and they made sure that that stopped. They stopped that. So they got Harvard University to present some documents and publish papers saying that, no, it's not the sugar, it's the saturated fat. Now we know they had done their own studies which showed that increasing sugar intakes was associated with worsening heart disease. And they hid that completely. It was completely suppressed.
Oh, that's criminal.
It is. And they're going to have to answer for it. And I think in the last 2 or 3 years, the focus has become more and more on sugar. So most people will say, Noakes, you know, you're a bit out on the carbohydrate story. Carbohydrates are still good for us, but we agree that sugar isn't. So when people attack me now, they say, you were quite right on sugar, but you're still wrong on
carbohydrates. Then you say to them, the carbohydrates are the sugar of tomorrow.
That's correct. And that's exactly right. Exactly right.
So you see, I thought I was maybe on the money there, but you've helped clarify.
Good.
Now I understand it even better. All right, Prof, there are a couple of things we need to get into here because, again, I don't really care about nutrition very much. I did something interesting, though, in the last 3 weeks, and I want to have your take on this. Yeah. I did this brown rice diet. I just instead of having heavy morning, afternoon, and evening meals, I had a lot of brown rice. I cut out a lot of the other carbs. I cut out a lot of the fat, and I cut out all the sweet stuff. And I did lose like 4 kilograms. The point wasn't to lose weight for me. It was sort of a detox, just trying to get healthy. Does that sound okay to you?
Well, it'll work for about 2 months or 3 months, but then you'll get hungry and you'll want to start eating more food again. So you can't eat carbohydrates and control your weight. That's the problem.
Mm.
It's because carbohydrates drive hunger, whereas protein and fat satiate you. So, and that's the key. The key to understand is if you want to control your weight, you've got to get rid of hunger.
So what did we eat in the old prehistoric times? What did we eat when we climbed down from the trees?
Fat.
That's it.
Yeah. So if you look back at even last 10,000, probably 20,000 years, all the continents were filled with giant, huge animals which were made of fat. Mammoths and rhinoceroses and hippopotamuses. And humans killed them. We were such skilled hunters that we wiped them out. So within 1,000 years of arriving on the American continents, they wiped out all the largest animals.
That's right.
And the key was they went for the healthiest animals. Now, you'd think if we were poor hunters, we'd be like lions. Lions choose the weakest animal.
You scavenge at the back almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Humans did exactly the opposite. They went for the healthiest animals. Why? Because they've got more fat on them. And you see, you have to have fat in the human diet. You have to have a lot of fat.
So when people say, and we're going to jump around a lot here, but I think our audience will forgive us. And, you know, there are going to be lots of questions. And, of course, there's going to be controversy and there'll be complaints and tweets about how you're a charlatan and all kinds of things. Sure. We'll get into that, too.
Sure.
But let's just stick to this conversation for a second. What is this obsession with body fat percentage and is it healthy? And what is your understanding of that as a man who also has been involved with athletes, exercise, all of that kind of thing?
Actually, it's not the body fat, it's the muscle mass that you want. Muscle mass predicts life expectancy. So at my age of 68, the big problem as you age is you lose muscle mass. And you've got to prevent that. You must keep your strength up. And that's one of the keys. So fat mass is not really the issue. What is the issue is how much fat sits in your liver. That's the key. Because that then causes what we call atherogenic dyslipidemia. It causes, and I'm sorry, that's a big term. But when you go to the doctor will measure your cholesterol and think he's helping you, but he's not. Because he doesn't understand that it's a high carbohydrate diet causes fat in the liver. And that causes the bad cholesterols that cause heart disease. And the only way to correct that is to eat a high-fat diet. So the problem was the cardiologists have given us exactly the wrong advice. They've said eating fat makes you fat.
Gives you cholesterol.
Gives you cholesterol, gives you heart disease. No. It's eating carbohydrates, gives you a fatty liver, and the fatty liver then causes the damage in the arteries.
Because they test it in the blood.
Exactly, but the only reason...
The blood's been through the liver.
Exactly, but they only test for cholesterol because it's a convenient test. And that if you go back far enough to the 1960s, you find that there was a guy who worked out that it's the what we call the lipoproteins, or it's the types of cholesterol you have in your blood. It's not just one. It's got to look at all of them. And those become distorted. But there were only five machines in the whole of the United States where they could actually measure these things. So they said, let's make it simple. We'll measure cholesterol.
Right.
And then so we became brainwashed. And people have to understand, for 50 years, we've been brainwashed into believing that it's saturated fat raises cholesterol, cholesterol causes heart disease. It's completely wrong.
See, for someone like me, and I think for a lot of people, it's confusing as all hell. There was a time they told us butter is better for you than margarine, then they told us margarine is better for you than butter. Yeah, then we had to learn all about saturated and polyunsaturated, unsaturated fats. Nobody knows what the hell's going on anymore. And who do we trust?
Well, you don't trust the nutrition experts who are funded by industries. That's the key. And that's nutrition science is the weakest science because it's based on what we call associational studies.
Mm-hmm.
In brief, that means that I go and sign up 80,000 people today and I follow them for the next 40 years. And at some point, I measure what they report they're eating. Not what they're eating, what they report. And we now know that reports
lies.
People
lie all the time about what they eat.
Precisely.
You ask a fat person, what if you didn't eat last night? They said, no, I didn't eat. Meanwhile, they're raiding the fridge at 12.
So we know that what people report is fiction. But the whole basis of the nutritional sciences is on these fictional reports. And then you study for 40 years. And then they say, okay, is the cappuccino you had 40 years ago causing your heart disease? So they bury down into the data, and they find some obscure thing. Oh, these people ate more carrots or whatever, or more bacon, for example.
So there's no causal link.
No, that's right.
And there's...
That's it.
There's no... It's not even analogous.
No, absolutely. And the problem is that 40 years ago, people were told to eat cereals and grains. So the healthiest people ate cereals and grains. Now, 40 years later, those people will still be practicing things that are healthy. And it's not whether they ate cereals and grains or they avoided bacon that made them healthy. It's the fact that they were running marathons and they never smoked and they maintained their weight and so on and so forth. And they don't, you can't correct for those factors. Or maybe they stayed married and all these factors, which are much more important. So the whole basis of the science is based on the theory that nutrition...
There's so many variables.
Exactly. That's you get the whole point. And that's why associational studies don't work. What you have to do is you take 80,000 people, you randomize them, 40,000 in one group, 40,000 in the other. You lock them up in two jails and you feed the one group bacon right. or whatever, and the other group you don't feed bacon.
But you can't do that to exactly. people. You can't isolate other externalities.
Now, however, there have been a lot of studies of changing people's diet to a low-fat diet where they've gone and they've cut and they start eating low-fat milks, etc. And they've found not one scrap of evidence that increasing your or reducing your fat intake makes you healthy. In fact, there's evidence that it makes you unhealthy. And they don't report that. So there are these intervention trials which are looking for causation. And all the trials of low-fat diets have failed spectacularly. And that's the point we make in the book, that these epidemiologists and nutritional scientists will never admit that on the real hard science, they've disproved the low-fat diet.
That's why you called the book The Law of Nutrition, because you're talking about it like it's folklore and people absolutely. Believe things that they don't necessarily have evidence for.
Correct.
Now, this is unscientific behavior. This is unscientific method. How is it then that you get into trouble with so many doctors and scientists? Why do they hate you? You would think the people that would hate you would be like religious nuts. You know, why is it doctors and scientists who are fighting with you?
Well, nutrition is a religion. That's the problem. And we actually, we've got very good evidence that the Seventh-day Adventists in the United States have been strongly involved in directing food choices towards a so-called plant-based diet. And they have influenced the dietary guidelines. The first dietary guidelines brought out in the U.S. in 1917, 7 of the 8 people were from one particular religion, Seventh-day Adventists.
You're kidding.
But I'm not kidding.
Why? What to what avail? I mean,
because if you go back to the history of the Seventh-day Adventists, one evening a lady woke up and
she said... That's the Mormons, right?
No, they aren't. The Seventh-day, the Mormons allowed meat, and they do actually just as well as anyone else. She woke up one evening and she said God told her that meat causes cancer and that meat causes all environmental problems. And that then was written into the religion. So I don't want to...
And now they retrofit the food science into their religion.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that's just anecdotal, but interesting.
That exactly right. And so, we only uncovered
what about
that.
The doctors? Where are these doctors who are so annoyed with you? They're furious with you. They argue with you the whole time.
Well, because this strikes at the basis of medicine. So again, we go back historically. 1910, the Flexner Report in the United States of America outlawed everything except pharmacologically based medicine. So we changed so that the chiropractors and all those sorts of people were outlawed. And only medical schools that were allowed to continue on the basis of the Flexner Report were universities, medical schools that taught that you treat patients with drugs, pharmaceutical drugs derived from the petroleum industry. Surprised that it was the petroleum industry that was driving it. So that's where we got the so-called scientific approach to medicine. And any other alternative forms of medical care were isolated and thrown out. That happened. And the world adopted this American model of medicine. So when I go to medical school now, you are taught that each disease, you have to prescribe certain drugs to treat that condition. What's happened is, if it's a nutritional disease driving all these conditions, then treating it with drugs isn't going to help. What we show in the book, and this is not from me, it's from guys at Stanford and so on, is that there's one condition underlying most chronic disease. When I'm talking about chronic disease, I'm heart disease, diabetes, obesity, dementia, even cancer. And it's a condition called insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. And if you're insulin resistance...
Are we talking about type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, that's the... It's all right. That's the condition.
That's where it results.
It becomes that. Yeah. Exactly right. So most of us are insulin resistant. And the biological reasons why humans would be insulin resistant, because if you're eating a high-fat diet, you want to be insulin resistant and spare the carbohydrates for certain things. So we've got this population of insulin-resistant people, and then in the 1960s and 70s, we suddenly forced them to eat more carbohydrates. And that caused the massive increase in chronic diseases that we face today.
All right, I'm going to take this step by step. Yeah. So first of all, medicine has a tendency now to become quite orthodox.
Yeah.
And that the orthodox medicine doesn't allow for all the other different kinds of medicine.
Correct.
Which may or may not have scientific value, but they certainly have health benefits. I mean, chiropractors aren't real doctors, homeopaths, that's not real medicine, you know, so on.
Yeah, but that's correct.
But if someone goes to a homeopath and they feel better afterwards, then they start to improve in health. It's you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that they haven't necessarily got evidence for, but we know it works.
So what my profession would say...
Is that acceptable, by the way?
Oh, well, I'll say to me it's absolutely acceptable, because if it didn't work, they would be out of business. So they are doing something right. Otherwise, they'd be out of business. So chiropractors...
Isn't this just to do with gullibility of people? I mean, you know, religion is the
same thing.
Does it
matter?
Right?
You know, does it matter? That's the placebo effect. We know the placebo effect accounts for 30% of what
we're
doing.
So someone doesn't murder someone because they think Jesus is watching. That's fine by
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Okay. Correct. So the placebo effect is part of medicine. And if you've ever practiced medicine, you know that.
Yeah.
That the placebo effect is huge. So that's the point. So we allowed only medicine that prescribed pharmaceutical drugs. So if you go to medical school today, you are taught this is heart disease and this is the way you treat it. And if you read the medical journals today, it's always one drug against the other. And I can't read those journals because it's a waste of time, because I know it doesn't matter which drug you're using. They're not as effective as taking the person off the carbohydrates that's causing the problem in the first place.
All right. Chemically,
carbohydrates
and fats aren't so different.
Well,
I mean, they're all carbon, hydrogen, oxygen.
Correct.
All of them, right? So when we say carbohydrate, what we mean is a chain of carbons.
Glucose. It's the glucose.
So we're talking particularly C12H12O22.
Something like that.
Something like that. Well, I can't remember what the H22O12. Sorry.
Good.
So that's sugar. And you get sucrose, fructose, and
that
glucose.
Is sugar. Yeah, that's right. So you've got glucose. And then you've got sugar, which is fructose and glucose bound together.
That's sucrose.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, glucose and starch are simply glucose, and starch is glucose molecules stuck together. Now, as soon as you put starch in your mouth, it starts to break down into glucose. So any carbohydrate actually in your body, it's as if you had taken glucose. And that's what people try to hide behind. They say, oh, but you see, if you eat starch in a potato, it's a long chain of glucose. Therefore, it's not going to have the same effect as glucose. But actually, the body doesn't recognize ultimately whether that glucose came from...
Just let me understand the digestive system of a human being. And again, I'm sorry to make this rudimentary for you and for other doctors, perhaps, and people who are already versed in this stuff. I eat a whole lot of stuff. It goes into my stomach. As I understand it, your stomach is the most hostile environment in the universe. It takes whatever you've ingested and it just destroys it. It chemically renders it completely different to the way it came in. You've got hydrochloric acid in there. You've got, I would imagine it takes all these carbons and just obliterates them, makes them into single carbons.
No, it has to go a little bit lower. It has to go into the intestine.
So then, after the stomach, it goes into the small intestine.
That's correct.
And that's where the useful stuff is taken out. And in the large intestine, the bad stuff is kept for later shitting out. Is that roughly correct?
No. What? It's a lovely story, but...
Help me
well,
understand.
Let's start firstly. Do you know that humans have the most acidic stomachs of all mammals?
Why?
Correct.
I didn't know that, but why do we?
Absolutely, because we're carnivores. And we used to eat foods that were lying around in the...
So what do you say to a vegan?
I say, I'm happy that you choose to be a vegan, but you must know that it's a very difficult diet. And
Is that why they always look so sick?
Well, I'm not going to say that. It's a potentially dangerous diet. And... And you need to really, really study it, because you're not getting the nutrients you need.
Protein especially.
And fats. You need the omega-3 fats.
So we've got this very acidic stomach because we break down meat.
Yeah, and we were eating frot meat. We would steal it from animals, and it was full of bacteria that you needed to sterilize. So that's why we have that. But then it gets into the small bowel, it's broken down. The proteins are broken down, amino acids, and they're absorbed. And the carbohydrates is broken down to glucose. Now, the key point is that humans were not designed to have a sudden influx of glucose into the small intestine.
It's like slow release is what we needed.
Well, what we originally evolved as...
Hang on. Our energy comes from mitochondria in our cells.
Correct.
These mitochondria, they fuse and they do fission and fusion, but of carbon chains.
Yes, correct. But it comes from carbohydrate or fat.
Okay.
And humans mainly ate fat and were mainly fat adapted to burn fat rather than to burn carbohydrate. And what happened was that in the 1970s, we suddenly declared that carbohydrates were healthier for us than fats. And then the athletes started eating carbohydrates, and I started promoting that as well. And so we got the idea that carbohydrates are special. They're not. You do not need to eat 1 gram of carbohydrate to be healthy. There's no essential requirement for carbohydrate, whereas there are essential fats and there are essential proteins, which you have to get in your diet. You can't generate.
Are you saying to me that if I get a plate of bacon and I get a plate of brown rice, my system, cellular level and on a macro level, the entire energy component of my system can be provided better for by the bacon than the brown rice?
Correct. Absolutely
that's,
correct.
That's marvelous news. It's almost too good to be true.
Right.
Why is this controversial? I'm still stuck on why this is so controversial. You yourself just admitted that among the things that you used to teach people was that carbohydrates were good and they were essential. And you changed your mind based on the evidence.
Yeah, that's right.
That to me indicates an evolution in terms of, okay, I made a mistake. That was wrong. We've got better evidence now.
Yeah.
Why would you want to stick to bad evidence? And how come so many people are threatened by you?
Well, they're threatened because let's get back to the point we were leading up to very nicely. Was that medicine teaches that we treat you with drugs.
Got you.
85% of chronic disease is caused by the foods that we're eating. And you can't out-medicalize them. You can't treat them with medication. You have to remove the cause, which is a high-carbohydrate diet and people who are insulin resistant. So this is what happens. So when we, as I show in the book, show that if you reduce the carbohydrates, you can reverse or put your type 2 diabetes into remission, that's very threatening. Why? Because the professor of endocrinology is dependent on the industry for his career because he has to go around the world promoting the use of insulin. Insulin is one of the most widely prescribed drugs in the world. It's a growth industry. And so
This is just again to remind me, I did anatomy and physiology at school, but I wasn't very well versed in this. You've got a pancreas. Does the pancreas provide you with insulin?
That's correct.
And if you're a diabetic, it's not making enough insulin.
No. If you're type 1 diabetic, which is the early onset diabetes, usually occurs before the age of 10 or 12, you're quite correct. You destroy all your insulin. So those people have to inject external insulin.
And why do you need insulin? What does the insulin do with carbohydrates and with sugars?
It stops you burning fat. That's one of the key drivers. It turns on carbohydrate metabolism. And it takes carbohydrate out of the bloodstream because humans are not designed for all this carbohydrate. So you secrete insulin, which turns on your carbohydrate metabolism and stops you burning fat.
The balance of evidence is then already in your favor.
Of course it is.
Because of all these fat people running around with insulin problems.
Of course it is.
So how is this a debate still?
Yeah. Because
now I'm going to get into trouble with you. Twitter's the worst place to have these conversations. We're going to talk about that now. But how can people not want something that is demonstrably true to be true?
Because medicine has become a business. It's no longer a profession. And someone explained to me what a profession is. A profession is if you're baking bread and you say, I just want to make the best bread possible and I'm going to put the best ingredients in, that's a profession. Once you say, actually, I just want to sell lots of bread, then that becomes a business. And that's what's happened to medicine. Medicine is we want as many people who are sick because that's what medicine is about. It's no longer about cures. It's about making customers for ourselves. And that's the tragedy. And that is driven by the pharmaceutical industry. So I make the statement quite openly that the medical profession has been captured by the pharmaceutical industry.
So as you were saying, there's this balance of evidence, and it would appear to me that the science has now given us enough to play with that we shouldn't be having old debates anymore. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, was there a burning bush were there actually 10 commandments? It's not important anymore, what the genesis of it is. Yeah. You changed your mind. It seems that science is changing. So are there nutritionists we can trust? Are there ones that are not funded by the food companies, the sugar companies, the people who sell the drugs?
Well, there are very few of them, and all of them are on the low-carb grouping globally. So there are probably about 100 of us globally who are pushing this low-carbohydrate message. And none of us is funded by industry because there's no industry that benefits from our statements. Meat producers and so on and milk producers haven't really funded anyone to do the research. So there is a group of people around the world. And I think that's an important point to make, because Noakes is targeted as if he's the only person in the world who ever spoke about this banting diet, when the reality is it's a global phenomenon and it is growing and the science supports us. And part of the reason why Marika and I wrote this book was we said, here's the evidence. There is absolutely no evidence for the low-fat diet. Here's all the evidence why we should be restricting carbohydrates in our diet. And it is highly scientific, and it's every statement of fact is referenced with a scientific paper.
Isn't it possible that part of the reason people are so skeptical about the latest revelations, whether they be scientific or rubbish, is because we've had so much misinformation, yeah, and there's been active campaigning against the truth coming out in certain sectors. But people are also, we're diet bedonit now. There's too much. You go onto the internet and you type in weight. I don't know. I've never done this, but weight loss.
Yeah, sure.
I imagine there would be 1,000 links that would tell you 1,000 different things. And maybe in each one there would be some scintilla of truth.
Yeah.
But the average person is going to plow their way through your book, and then they might not necessarily check all the footnotes and things, because they might just be an ordinary person who isn't involved in this day-to-day, and still come out at the end going, I'm confused.
No, they'll never be confused.
You don't think so?
Once you read that book, because everyone's argument in there is consistent. And the consistency is very simple, that if you have insulin resistance or any of the conditions associated with insulin resistance, you should restrict your carbohydrates. That's a simple message.
Okay. I got into trouble the other day. I tweeted out a thing. I saw it in the news. Do you know what this is?
No.
Okay,
no.
Thank goodness. I embarrassed myself while I can actually explain it to you.
Yeah.
So I watched the news, and they said South Africa now has the seventh fattest people in the world, and we're the fattest in sub-Saharan Africa, particularly South African women.
Yeah.
So I tweeted that out. Look, I shouldn't have put the emoticon of the elephant, but, you know, for what it's worth, I thought, you know, let me try and be funny about this, because obviously it's a serious thing. It's a very serious thing with heart problems and obesity and all this stuff. But at the same time, you know, food, what you put into your body really is up to you. You can't be a victim of, you know, the patriarchy or conspiracy theories or whatever else. You can still, the government doesn't force feed SAMP into your mouth, right? So I got into trouble for this. But the fact is, we have an enormous problem in South Africa.
Exactly. And it's because we're not eating the elephants.
If we ate the elephants?
That's what we used to eat.
Now the animal rights people are all over you.
Well, you need to read the book, Once We Were Healthy. That's one of the final chapters.
Yes.
And we were healthy when we were eating animals which were full of fat. And
my favorite chapter is The Worst Mistake in the History of Medicine, which also has to do with it. You say our biggest mistake as a species was when we decided to not eat other animals.
Yeah, that's correct. And to start eating cereals and grains. The agricultural revolution 12,000 years ago began. Of course, that allowed us to be civilized, and we wouldn't be sitting here around with all this if it hadn't been for agriculture.
I'd be hacking at you for food.
Yeah, exactly. We'd be out there hunting for our elephants.
I'll tell you, you don't look like you'd be very appetizing.
That's right. Unless you want meat, not fat.
It does seem like a convenient excuse for some people to carry on brying and not worry about how fat they are.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people I know who do eat a lot of meat are not particularly healthy people.
Yeah, they don't understand it, that you've got to cut the beer and the sugar and the rice and the potatoes, so that they didn't quite get it right. So the key is you must count. The only thing you have to count is the calories coming or the grams coming from carbohydrate. That's all we do. And once you get that under control, below 100 grams, 50 grams, 25 grams, the rest falls in place, because now you eat only foods which are low carbohydrate, and you get so satiated, you just start to lose weight.
What would you give different advice to athletes?
No, not at all. The only slight difference is that if you're involved in highly competitive sport, which has explosive components, you could increase the carbohydrates up to about 200 grams per day. But then you must still be doing three or four hours exercise a day.
Do you not hunger for like potatoes and, you know, there's some chips? No,
the beauty of this diet is once you go on it, you change your gut flora. And when those gut flora get exposed to potatoes and chips, they get very angry and they die, and there's a big fight in your intestine and you feel sick. So the beauty of it is once you've been on this diet for a period, you've changed your physiology so much that you simply can't go back to eating those foods.
And it starts with little kids, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we feed little kids stuff that they shouldn't be
eating. And who do you think directs that? Who do you think?
Well, the people who make it as easy as possible for parents to, first of all, cheaply, and second of all, with a minimum of effort,
The processed food industry begins with baby foods, pureed baby foods.
I've always thought that stuff was rubbish.
Yeah, it is.
It just had an inclination. Yeah. Intuitive. You can't base this on anything scientific.
That's correct.
It's powders. It's formulas. It sounds to me too good to be true.
And do you know what happened in 1920 when the Gerber company came around and they realized, because they were canning foods, the canning food industry had just started, they said, why don't we can baby foods? Because it was simple. But they had to do one thing. They had to convince the mothers of America that this was more healthy than doing it the old way. And you know what they did? They signed up the dietitians. They started advertising in the dietitians' journals.
It's crooks.
Yeah, exactly. And that it is much healthier for your baby. Of course, they had no evidence. And then, I mean, around about the same time, a company called Procter & Gamble starts saying they were making candles, and all of a sudden electricity comes along, so they didn't need candles. So they said, what else can we make? Oh, they said, let's make something that replaces butter, margarine. So they produced a product called Crisco, and they did exactly the same. They said, this is much healthier for you to eat Crisco polyunsaturated fats than to eat butter. And there was absolutely no evidence. But because the marketing was so skilled, that's where it all starts. And ultimately, in 1964, the Procter & Gamble give about $2 million, which was a huge amount of money, to the American Heart Association. And suddenly, the American Heart Association finds that polyunsaturated fats in margarine are healthier for you than butter. Surprise, surprise. Was there any evidence? No. Is there evidence today that polyunsaturated fats in margarine are unhealthy? Absolutely. Does the Heart Foundation tell you that? Absolutely not. And that's I give all the evidence. Study by study, showing that if you're eating polyunsaturated fats in margarine, you're harming your health. And here's the evidence.
All right, I've got to ask you about a couple of particular foods. You bring up margarine and butter. So margarine it's probably a kind of plastic.
We're pretty close, yeah.
And it's just so easy to spread on the bread. That's why it's worked.
Well, it was also marketing because they said, you know, you're going to prevent your heart disease.
Is butter good for you?
Butter is absolutely healthy because that's what traditionally we eat. And if you look at GAN, you go back to once we were healthy, you'll find that many of those communities ate lots of butter.
And other dairy?
Dairy's fine. It's because it provides fat, soluble vitamins. And that's what happens when you start eating a low-fat diet. You lose all those fat-soluble vitamins. And I discussed Weston Price, who was an amazing man, who in the 1930s decided that the kids' teeth were worse, and he wondered why. And so he traveled around all continents looking for populations who were still eating their traditional foods. And he found that those eating traditional foods were incredibly healthy. They had none of the common diseases that we have today. Of course, they died of trauma, they died of childbirth, they died of infections, but they weren't dying of cancer and heart disease and diabetes and rheumatic diseases and arthritides and so on. And you have to conclude, well, then these diseases are caused by the modern diet. But he found a population in Switzerland, for example, who existed only on the products of the cattle, just as the Maasai do. And they were unbelievably healthy, as are the Maasai.
Another food type that I'm confused by is processed meats and things, because I don't know whether the processing makes it so unappetizing to me or whether it's the idea of, you know, that it's an animal. Because I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian by any stretch of the imagination. I do love to eat meat, and I do feel like I get more nutritive value out of a steak than I do out of, you know, a pile of potatoes.
Well, absolutely.
But if I think about something as revolting as polony, it's revolting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're going to tell me that's nutritional.
No, I'm going to say that it's probably better than the potatoes.
Okay,
but it's not
pretty gross.
It's not a grass-fed beef or grass-fed lamb. I mean, lamb to me is the Karoo lamb is probably the healthiest because we know there's no antibiotics. There's nothing else, and these are eating pesticide-free plants and so on. So that's really healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want to be eating. You want to be eating animals that are eating what they were designed to eat, not cattle that are being fed maize. Those animals can't survive because they get the wrong bacteria in the gut. They never evolved to eat maize.
Speaking of the gut bacteria, the amount of DNA that we've borrowed from our gut flora is actually extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I think they've borrowed some of ours in return. But I mean, these little single-celled organisms that operate in our digestive tract, they're a part of us.
Absolutely.
A whole part of our chromosomes is made up of these. Sharing it with us.
Absolutely. And now, when I was in medical school, no one even knew what the biome was. I mean, it's only in the last 5 to 10 years that people have suddenly realized that your gut flora probably determines your health ultimately. And we're still scratching the surface, because the problem is that there are trillions of bacteria there. And
we treat these gut flora with such disrespect.
Absolutely. With antibiotics. And geez, if I can say one piece of advice, use antibiotics very, very sparingly, as little as possible.
Because we know that if you overuse them, you also develop an immunity to them, and it kills it in its usefulness for everyone else, right?
Correct, yeah.
But it goes back into the environment as something that we can resist more.
But the acute effects are very frightening. And we don't know what the optimum bacteria of the gut are, and we don't know how to get there yet. All we know is that if people with certain conditions and you change the diet and you give them more fat and protein, they get better, and so we presume.
Where do they live? Mostly in the small intestine?
All the way. The large intestine has got the anaerobic bacteria that ferment cellulose. So if you're eating a vegetarian diet, humans cannot digest that stuff.
Didn't the appendix have a lot to do with cellulose?
Yeah, and it's a vestigial organ, and it's kind of hasn't quite disappeared.
It's quite big in antelope, right?
Yeah, that's correct, because they are fermenters. They ferment the cellulose into saturated fat. And that's why a cow is just an unbelievable animal, because it converts grass, which has no nutritional value, into saturated fat and lives on that saturated fat. And even more so, the proteins come from the bacteria in its gut. So, because there's no protein in grass. Mm-mm. So the meat that you eat is made by this incredible animal that converts the protein in the bacteria into the protein that it used to build itself.
I wrote a book a while ago. I'm certainly not going to compete with your book, but one of the chapters was called "Cows Are the Most Amazing Animals." I didn't know what you've just told me, because they are the only things that can turn grass into steak.
Yeah, that's correct.
And I love them for that.
Yeah, that's correct.
And they've got those big eyes and very sweet animals. But the environmentalists must be onto you as well, because anyone who posits that meat is good is an environmental terrorist in some of these people's eyes, because what you're really saying is, oh yes, we must farm animals as much as possible. Methane, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, or carbons in the atmosphere, methane, whatever it might be. They say this is going to kill us all in the long run anyway. So now they're an enemy of yours as well,
absolutely.
Incidentally.
Yeah. Well, they need to look at the facts, you see, and the point is that if you're going to turn humans to only eating plant-based foods, you will destroy the planet. Because every time you go in and grow soy or maize, you totally destroy an environment. And then you throw in the pesticides and you destroy the topsoil. So the topsoil has just disappeared in the North America, where they grow all this huge amounts of grains. There's no topsoil left. And once the topsoil is denuded, the society fails. And that has happened over tens of thousands of years. So, for example, grains start in the Fertile Crescent in Persia. There's no more grains there because they destroyed the soil. They had to move further west and east. And so that's why grains only arrived in Britain in like 5,000 years ago, because people took them and then they destroyed the land behind them, and they had to just keep moving.
Do you believe in superfoods?
No, I don't.
There's no such thing.
I think that you eat nutrient-dense foods and you'll find all you need. Yeah.
So there's nothing.
But the key is that, you see, what we don't do is we don't eat animals nose to tail, as we say. We don't eat the livers, the brains, the bone marrows, and we don't distill the bones and eat bone broth. That's what the healthy populations do, have always done.
Really? You've got to eat them nose to tail?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And you've got to eat the guts and the intestine and everything. And then you get all the nutrients that you require.
So what are you eating? I mean, what a horrible menu must there be at the Noakes household? You're cooking intestines and...
We don't quite go that far, but that was the way I was brought up.
What's wrong with you people?
I was brought up in that way.
What, bone broth?
Absolutely, and brains and bone marrow, that I used to eat as a child, and livers and kidneys, they were on the menu every day. And that's why I'm a bit taller. You know, it's really interesting because I notice everyone's getting shorter.
Stand up quickly and see if I'm taller than you. We're the same.
Yeah.
We're about the same. What, 187?
Yeah, I'm 188, you know, I've got to say.
Okay, you got an inch,
yeah,
fine,
yeah.
Fair enough.
But I was raised on Rhodesian beef or Zimbabwean beef, you
see. Oh, by the way, congrats on your new president.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, so I like this. This makes sense to me. It appeals to, you know, the intuitive part, yeah, of what I understand of science, and you say that there's plenty more evidence in your book. Was it a very difficult book to write in terms of making sure you cross-referenced everything, you had everything annotated, and you had all the details in here, or was it very easy to do? And who did much of that? Was it you or Marika?
No, Marika writes the middle of the book, and she writes about the trial.
Okay.
And there's only one person who could have done that.
Now, what happened with this trial? This is the most controversial thing that happened here.
Yeah.
Marika, do you want to talk about this?
I'll leave it to
you. Oh, you're going to leave it to...
Come and join
us anyway. Yeah. Marika, you're not going to sit there like a veal.
Yeah.
lamb.
A lamb, sorry. I didn't mean a veal. How rude of me. So listen, congrats on the book.
Thank you.
Obviously, this is he's the superstar of nutrition to some people and the villain for others.
Yeah.
And this trial was something very important in health in this country, and it was a kind of a showcase for the world, really, of the two different sides of the argument.
Right. I would say it's seminal on very many different levels, because it gave people insight, gave me incredible insight into how and why so many doctors, dietitians, and academics are very busy suppressing evidence. And on the one hand, you think, you know, what's with these guys? You know,
How did you get involved?
Circuitously, I started reading media reports about Professor Noakes and how, you know, mad, bad, and rogue he'd
yes.
gone. And I had interviewed him years before that in his heyday.
Did you think
high
he was
carb.
Mad when you first met him?
When I first met him, he was full on at high carb, low fat.
Right.
I remember interviewing him, ironically, on carbo loading for athletes. A decade or so later, I started reading all these media reports saying that the guy's gone crazy.
Right.
So I thought I must find out because he always seemed so eminently rational and reasonable to me. So I wanted to find out why he'd gone rogue, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I phoned him and asked, and in his usual polite manner, he said, I said, can I have an interview? And he said, of course. And we ended up speaking for more than 2 hours. And I was absolutely stunned at how rational and reasonable and completely and utterly scientific he sounded. And he was saying things that were rattling my scientific cage, because I also bought in to...
You've been
to
writing
what,
about this stuff for a long time.
For a long time. Interestingly, I Googled myself one day and I saw that I had actually written about saturated fat not being the health demon we all thought it was about 10 years before I started writing about Professor Noakes. And at that time, I just thought, you know, this is very odd, but I'll write about it anyway. I dismissed it completely, thinking it was off the wall. And then I started doing the research. When I wrote the first article on him, it was an interview with him, and I got pilloried on social media. People immediately attacking my character and his character. And you know, I was saying to them, stop hurling insults, you guys. Can we go back to the science? And they could not. And I was thinking, could not, would not go to the science? What's up here? And then I started looking at this incredibly long litany of top doctors, dietitians, and academics in South Africa appearing to gang up on one man. And my natural inclination to loathe bullies made me just want to dig deeper and see what's behind it.
How did you feel in all of that? I mean, did you feel, Prof, like you were being predated upon?
Absolutely. And it really got worse on the four professors' letter to the Cape Times, which is described in a full chapter. When your own university disqualifies you from further involvement, and they just distance themselves from me in the most defamatory way.
Even if you kill people in the ANC, they keep you in.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that was the worst, because I'd worked for the university for 35 years and wow. and been a seminal scientist, and then they did this to me.
I did make some notes. There are a few things. So do you believe in vaccination for children?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes, of course I do, if the vaccination has been proved to be safe and effective. Mm-hmm. And that's the issue. You see, people, what is the
industry? You're not like that lunatic Jenny McCarthy who says that vaccination results in autism.
But there is evidence for that, you see. So, but it doesn't mean that everyone who's vaccinated has become autistic.
Because the last thing we want now is a whole bunch of Jenny McCarthy's not vaccinating their children and starting polio again.
But you know, you have to look into the history, and I don't want to get involved in this debate, but there's a whole body of evidence that vaccination is being overused.
Okay.
And that there
overused,
and overprescribed.
But you do believe in vaccination for I'm trying to clear up a lot of things that people have fought with you about before.
Now, of course, but I would minimize the amount of vaccination you do, because there's clear evidence that thimerosal, which is what keeps some of the bacteria, some of the viruses going or ineffective, is damaging to our health. And the CDC has suppressed information. Do you know that Robert De Niro, who made this film, The Vax or Anti-Vax or something, he offered $100,000 to anyone who can prove that vaccination is safe. No one has taken him up on it. There is no evidence that vaccination is safe.
Yeah, I get you. Again, we can't be absolute, right? Would you categorize yourself as an absolutist now in terms of the Banting diet?
I say that if you've got insulin resistance and you want to be healthy, you must restrict your carbohydrates. I also say if you want to be healthy, you shouldn't eat processed foods. You should eat real foods, which turns out to be low-carb, high-fat diet. I am an absolutist about sugar. You just can't have sugar in the diet. And the sooner people realize that, if you want to be healthy, you mustn't eat sugar.
Why do people struggle to stick to this low-carb, high-fat diet? Because a lot of them drop off after sort of 6 months.
Yeah, because they start eating carbohydrates. Because we live in an environment where carbohydrates is everywhere and sugar is everywhere. We don't live in an environment that we used to when I was growing up, where carbohydrate and sugar was much less apparent. We used to drink a Coca-Cola once a week, and you'd have sweets once a week. My father would give us a sweet on a Sunday or something, and that was it. Now you get rewarded every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Garage shop.
Exactly.
So is it worth having the bad breath and the flatulence?
Well, there's no flatulence. Flatulence is related to vegetarianism, not to this diet. Got that. Flatulence comes from vegetarianism. Yeah, of course, because it's cellulose.
If you eat meat, I mean, how come people who eat meat make such revolting, smelly farts?
No, they don't. It's the opposite. It's the opposite. It's the opposite. It's a vegetarian diet.
Vegetarians are the ones who fart badly?
Absolutely. Because they're producing all the gut, and that's why vegetarianism is very difficult for some people, because they haven't got the right bacteria to produce the safe.
My diet. I want to run by you. Okay. Again, this is very rudimentary.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not Professor Tim Noakes. So, what do you think of my diet? It's going to be a book. It's 2 pages. Fold it like this.
Yeah.
Front it says "Eat less." In the back it says "Run more."
Well, that's rubbish.
What?
How can you eat less?
How dare you? Now I'm your enemy as well.
No.
What do you mean?
But that's you see, you bought
eat less, run more.
You bought into the fake theory. So
no, but these people are. You look at a portion size of some monstrosity at a buffet at a wedding, and you see her or him, and you see them putting plate after plate down their gullet. It's not good.
But what if there's reverse causation? What if the obesity is causing the overeating, rather than the overeating causing the obesity?
Yeah, but this is a chicken or egg thing.
No, but it's...
Surely, though, you have to get fat before the fat starts to dictate that you stay fat.
No. Okay, but my point is...
Are you saying obesity is a pre-existing condition?
Well, insulin resistance is a pre-existing condition. And then why do you eat? You eat with your brain. You know, that's the key. And the model you gave me is completely brainless. It's as if you can decide consciously to eat less, and you can't, because your brain drives your eating and it drives your physical activity. If, sir, you were to go to dinner tomorrow night at the best restaurant in Johannesburg, and I said, you know, I'm going to pay for everything, and you said, you know, I'm really going to take Noakes to the cleaners tomorrow, I'm going to eat everything, what would you do tomorrow? You wouldn't eat, and you'd go and run a marathon at lunchtime, and you would arrive so hungry. You've eaten less and exercised more, and what's it done? It's made you hungry, and that's why those diets never work. So what you have to do, you have to understand that obesity is a disease of hunger. It's people who are always hungry. And I will tell you now how you're going to eat tomorrow, because you're going to tell everyone about this experiment. Tomorrow morning, you're allowed by your religion to eat bacon.
I can eat what I want.
Yeah, you're going to eat as much bacon, as much eggs, and as much sausages, and as much yogurt, full fat, non-sweetened. Yeah. And you're going to fill yourself so you can barely get up.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you, when will you get hungry and start thinking about food again? And you'll find it'll be 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Whereas on your breakfast, brown rice, you are hungry in 3 hours. And so you have to have another dose of brown rice, and you have to have another dose. And then your calorie consumption is increased because you're always hungry.
Three big portions.
Yeah. So I eat once a day.
Really?
Yeah.
What
once
time?
A day. And that, well, it could be lunch, it could be breakfast, it could be dinner.
You don't wake up in the morning and go,
I'm never hungry in the mornings. Because, and it doesn't matter regardless of what I ate the day before. I'm not hungry. So we had a good meal last night. That was all I had. I had a breakfast yesterday morning, some eggs and bacon, and then we ate again at 11 o'clock last night, and we had a trout.
Oh,
and I'm not going to be hungry again till this evening, because I'm burning the fats that my body has stored.
Raw foods, any thought on that?
Well, you know, humans became human when we started cooking, because cooking makes the food more easy to digest.
You're right. It's also when our dentition changed.
Exactly correct.
Else, right?
Exactly correct. So tomorrow you're going to do that experiment, and you're going to see, my gosh, I only have to eat once or twice
a day. It's
going
to be so tough to eat all that bacon.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't it lovely? Well, you can have a steak if you want to, but make sure it's a steak with lots of fat in it. And then you can add the cheese. So my point is that the dietitians have got it all wrong, because they're saying you've got to eat portion size and you've got to consciously try to cut down your calories. You cannot do that.
Yeah.
You can do it for 6 months, but then you break. Now, you asked what happens to the Banting people who break. Well, they start eating sugar and they start eating carbohydrates. And unfortunately, once you go on this lifestyle, that's it for life, and you have to stick with it. So there are simple rules. The beauty of this diet is the rules are so simple. You know, it's no carbohydrates. That's the rule. So,
I like this. It's fun talking to you.
Well, I can change and I can make you healthy by following this advice.
I'm happy. I think whenever we discover something new and we can prove that it works, we should give it a try.
Absolutely.
And if you feel like your life is better after that, and you feel like personally your biochemistry is improved by it, then it works.
Absolutely. And Gareth, I can't emphasize that enough. It doesn't matter what the science says. You have to find out for yourself. And that's the beauty of this diet and why it's taken over South Africa.
And stop having a go at Tim Noakes on Twitter. It's 280 characters now. It's still not enough for you to buy the goddamn book if you want to argue with him, and make sure you know what you're talking about. And if you do have a good case, then you'll be willing to hear it.
Absolutely. But no one ever attacks us on the facts. They always just attack me as being something.
Yeah, I hate
other.
That. But you must, you know what? Can I tell you something? Like, I don't want to go on Twitter anymore. It's a hellhole. And the people on there are all bitter, angry, miserable people who have shit lives and they hate everyone.
Yeah.
And then they find Tim Noakes and they say, if I say something horrible to him, then I'll get attention from him because my daddy isn't here.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Ridiculous. Right. Childish. Exactly. Get over your goddamn selves. All right, Prof. Nice to see you.
Thanks so much, Gareth.
This is CliffCentral.com.